Good morning, everyone. Such a beautiful fall day out there today. Love all the colors. Welcome to our service for Sunday, October 29th, 2017. We'd like to offer a special welcome to those watching at home today via our live streaming service. To learn more about our live streaming, please contact Nadia in the church office. My name is Larry Bolt, and I have the privilege to serve as your worship weaver today. Yes, you heard that right, worship weaver. That's our new name of our committee. In the spirit of gratitude and respect, we want to acknowledge the Saanich First Nations on whose traditional land we gather today. Yesterday, I was reading through the Times Colonist, and I came across a wonderful article by our own Reverend Shauna, which spoke of being present in our constantly connected world. This reminded me that for me to be present and connected while I'm in church, I need to be disconnected for an hour.
Well, good morning and welcome. This is the last Sunday that we will be exploring the theme of healing. And we've looked at healing from many different angles, which is what we do with these themes, is part of what I love about our themes. You hear a word and you think, oh, I understand that. Healing, I got that licked. But then you come to church each and every Sunday of the month of that theme and you hear a new piece of it. You think about what healing means in your own spirit. You think what it means to share a sense of healing with another person. You think about the sense of healing that our world needs. You think about the fact that our process with First Nations people is truth, healing, and reconciliation. So healing deserves at least 5 weeks of your attention. And so this morning, we're going to conclude our exploration of the theme of healing by looking at what it means to be better together. In our Western cultural world, we were often taught that it's better to go it alone. Rugged individualism. Lots of rugged in that rugged individualism, am I right? And I'm wondering, what would it be like if we were given the message, it's better to go it together? To acknowledge and to really see ourselves as part of one human community. That my well-being is wrapped up in your well-being. That my ability to feel healed and whole is all wrapped up in your ability to feel healed and whole. So we'll explore that this morning. Are we better alone or better together? Come, let us explore that dimension of healing that we find when we are together in one another's company. Come, let us be community this morning.
Join us on the quilt up front. I've got a story that comes from Germany this week. It's one that I think the Grimm's brothers might have heard at a kitchen table about 200 years ago. But it's one I think that's still worth hearing. Wow, we've got all sorts of critters here. Nice to see you. Well, Sister Goose and all her family, her brothers and sisters, her cousins, her aunties, uncles, her mom and her dad and her grandma and her grandpa, they had found an incredible meadow. Oh, the grass was green and tasted so sweet and juicy. And at the same time, some of the plants had gone to seed already and the grains were rich and delicious. Oh, those geese got busy, each in their own little direction, munching and crunching away on that yummy, yummy food. They ate and they ate and they ate and they ate and they ate, and their bellies grew bigger and heavier. And it was about then that Mr. Fox was out for his morning walk. And he walked along and he walked along the trail, and his nose began to twitch. Oh, something smelled awfully good. He came around the corner. There was a whole meadow full of fat geese. He licked his lips. It was about then that Sister Goose and all the other geese noticed something else about the meadow. There was a big cliff behind it, and on either side there were thick, thick bushes. And the path that led in was also the only one out. And guess who was on the path? Mr. Fox. Oh, they started to quake, they started to shiver. And then Sister Goose had a bit of an idea. Well, she knew she could probably fly up and away. She hadn't eaten quite as much as some of her cousins. But she knew they wouldn't be able to fly away, and that would be no good at all. And so she said, "Welcome, Mr. Fox." All the geese turned and looked at her. "What is she talking about?" She said, "Welcome, Mr. Fox. We've been preparing ourselves for you." "You have?" he said. And he licked his lips. She said, Yeah, you can see we're getting nice and fat. We're going to be very tasty." She said, "But you know what, Mr. Fox? We will taste even sweeter and more delicious if you just give us a chance to say our prayers." Oh, he liked that idea. Sweet, delicious. He said, "Oh, you go ahead. You say your prayers." He could see the cliff. He could see the bushes, too. They couldn't get away. And so Sister Goose said, "Come, come." And the others were all thinking, "What? What is she doing?" But they came to her, and she said, let us link wings while we say our prayers." And so those geese, they all linked wings, and they formed a great big circle in that meadow. They had their wings linked, and they began to pray, as only geese can pray. Or people pretending to be geese. Gaggle, 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 gaggle. The prayers went on and on and on, and Mr. Fox thought, "Yeah, that's exactly what he said. Hurry up," is what he said. But the geese, they weren't going to be hurried. They linked their wings a little tighter, and then they continued to pray. Gaggle, 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 gaggle. It's kind of a soothing sound, you know? And Mr. Fox was thinking so hard about how sweet and delicious they were going to be. And he closed his eyes. And after a little while, he started to snore. Sister Goose saw that. She broke ranks with the others, and she led them out. And those geese, as they tiptoed past Mr. Fox all together, they thought, "His teeth don't look that sharp." And poor Mr. Fox didn't have breakfast that day. It's a good thing to do, link wings. And let us now link arms to form the arches. And we'll go to our rooms. I invite you to join me now in a time of recollection, remembrance, silence, meditation. I will speak a few words and then invite you into a time of silence to commune with your own soul, your deepest yearnings, your prayers for our world. Here we are perched in this poignant season,
in our worship life as a community, we are on the precipice between healing and ancestry. In the life of worshiping communities around the world, we are perched between the high holy days of Judaism, Diwali in Hinduism, the Day of All Souls and All Saints, and Remembrance Day. During this season, which speaks to us of holding on and letting go, which speaks to us of all we have loved and all we have lost, in this season, which reminds us that beauty surrounds us, that beauty is within us, and yet there is so much obscuring that beauty. Let us take some moments of silence to remember those close to our hearts at this time of year, to remember all within ourselves that we are still longing to heal, and to remember all of our wishes for wholeness for all who struggle in our world. A time of silent togetherness. For all that is our life, for the meditations of our hearts, may we find cause to be grateful and courage and strength to face all that is worrisome. Blessed be, and amen.
I was raised to be independent, to persevere and find ways to do things without asking for help. This became a trait of mine. I expected to be able to do anything without help. And when help was offered, I usually shunned it. I was taught to go it alone. Now then, when I joined the worship team a little over 2 years ago, I did so with so much fear that I would fail. When I was told that being part of the worship associate team meant writing a personal sharing, picking hymns, reading announcements, welcoming, sharing the plate and more, I felt overwhelmed. My first thought was, how will I ever manage to do this? And for 3 years? I've spoken in public before, but the audience was always combined of strangers. Here at my church, these are my friends, my peers. I had watched services led by others such as Liz Graham, Susan Lang, and all of the other worship associates and thought that, wow, they're good. I can never match up to the quality of service that they are providing. Reverend Melora kept reassuring me that all would be just fine. Before I knew it, it was my turn. I had shouted others, but had not had to step up. In that week preceding the service, I did something that was totally against my nature. I asked for help. The first person I reached out to was Liz, who at that time was our committee chair. She and Reverend Melora helped me to write my script. Others helped me to set up the chalice, organize the candles, and the many other duties that I was responsible for. I learned that I was not alone. I was among a group of people who not only read our seven principles, but lived by these principles. The love I felt from them for our church, for each other, and this congregation stays with me to this day. When I began this journey, I thought that this was something that I would have to do on my own, because I was raised to think that I could do anything without help. That thought is now the farthest thing from the truth. I learned that I don't have to do it alone anymore. All I have to do is ask for help.
talk about the poignancy of fall, that song. I told the Ringers I wouldn't sing along. I'm very proud of myself that I didn't. Jazz fan that I am, I was so tempted, but so beautiful. Thank you so much. Well, I don't have a reading for you this morning. I contemplated many possibilities, but I decided I had too much to say, so I would just get right to it. So this is Better Together. I've had several conversations this week with people about this morning's topic, about my written description about going it alone versus going it together. And more than one person wondered aloud to me, are we really better together? On the one hand, they were sort of being facetious, kind of, I think. But they were a little worried that my topic sounded strikingly simplistic. They were niggling me a bit to really try to dig deep. On the one hand, they were being completely earnest. Isn't most of the harm that we see in our world today the result of damage done by one or a group of human beings to another? Aren't there days when we look at the headlines and think, wouldn't it be better, or at the very least, safer for all involved if we would just keep to ourselves, keep well enough alone? And so even though these folks were kind of niggling me a bit, I decided to take their questioning, their rumbling, seriously. And after some reflection, I do still think and believe that we are better together. And yet I think in order to have that abstract and ideal vision of human community, whole and reconciled and healthy, become real and concrete in the way that we connect with one another, I think we still have some hard work to do. To truly be better together takes skills and tools and earnest effort that I think are often in short supply. So let me try this morning to unpack this better togetherness that I envision. We all want and crave a sense of belonging and connection. It's one of the most fundamental drives of being human. My colleague in D.C. used to say we all desperately want to be loved, and yet we do everything possible to push it away. We behave in ways that undermines the very possibility of connection, even though we say we want it. I see two major stumbling blocks that appear again and again for myself and others on the road to that better together. Stumbling block number one is that we don't know ourselves well enough. We haven't taken the time to know well who we are and who we aren't, what we do well in relationship and what our weaknesses are. And if we don't have a good relationship with ourselves, I know it sounds a little bit corny and hokey, but it's really true that we cannot be in relationships with others very well if we don't know ourselves. Number two, and I think this is huge, we don't see our own biases. We think that our view of other people is spot on and objective. Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. We think that our view of other people is spot on and objective when in actuality we are projecting lots and lots of things onto them all the time and seeing them through the unique lens of our own view of the world. We each carry so much into every single relationship, every single interaction we have with any and everyone. We bring our mood du jour. We bring our previous experience with people who look similar to the person we're interacting with now. We bring our own social location into that interaction. Now, I'm going to tell you a story that's not doesn't make me look good at all. So this is what ministers usually don't do. This is textbook 101, what not to do in a sermon. So I was walking downtown one afternoon, and I was kind of on my way with a purpose, walking a little more like New York and a little less like Victoria. And these people came out of a restaurant. A group of two or three people came out of a restaurant, and I was going to have to bob and weave to get around them. Now, this crowd of people coming out of the restaurant, not anything particularly descriptive or interesting about these people necessarily, but one of the people coming out of the restaurant, this gentleman coming out, he was putting his coat on while he was exiting the restaurant, and he was taking up all this space on the sidewalk, right? He had his coat, and he was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And as I'm getting ready to bob and weave and go around this guy, into my head pops, typical white guy move. He's taken up half the sidewalk. He has no awareness of space. He doesn't care about other people around him. Typical entitled white guy behavior. Boom. Whoa. Now, it's a good thing I didn't say that out loud. It was my inside voice. But the guy, not hearing my inside voice, turns and says, oh, I am so sorry I didn't see you right there. To which I, of course, say to my inside voice, you see, Lingood? Not everybody's doing what you think they're doing. That might be the nicest white guy in the world right there. You don't know. But that's what I was walking around with in my head that day, right? Objective, yeah. And just seeing him for who he was, right? Ironically enough, those two reasons are some of the best reasons why we absolutely need relationship, right? We don't know ourselves well enough, and we walk around with biases. We need relationship for just that reason. Because if I'm not in relationship with other people, then A, my capacity for empathy and understanding doesn't grow. It's only by relating to other people that I can see, that I can sob, that I can understand what others are going through and feel deeper empathy for them. And by being in relationship, I increase my accountability for my actions and my behaviors and my judgments beyond that inner voice that got so loud that afternoon on the sidewalk. If I'm not checking in with other people, saying, I saw this, is that what you saw too? Then I'm more likely to think I'm right all the time. More likely to think that my life experiences and my firsthand knowledge are the only firsthand experiences and knowledge in the world. Left to my own devices, my own life experience, and the palette of my understanding shrinks to the size of my own life. The work it takes to build relationships rooted in health and wholeness for all involved and community that respects and engages all participants is profoundly countercultural in 2017. If you were not convinced before about just how hard the work of creating beloved community is, then there has been ample evidence of late in the headlines to disabuse you of that notion. the ongoing instances of sexual harassment and violence against women, highlighted by the hashtag MeToo movement. My goodness, we seem to often be getting worse together rather than better. All of the ways in which we see people relating across differences in ways that need extra sensitivity, but actually coming in like a bull in the china shop and doing the exact opposite. Sensitivity of men relating to women, white people relating to people of color. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Those relationships take even more work. And we're not even really ready or willing to do the garden variety work. So we have been too often worse together. But some of this has been, I think, perpetuated by two persistent Western cultural norms. The rugged individualism that Larry spoke of so movingly. And two, I think, the stigmatization of time alone. Sounds kind of funny for me to say that, doesn't it? I'm saying you need time alone in order to be better at relating to other people, but I actually believe that. So let me try to debunk these two Western cultural norms. Larry did it for you with the first one, this rugged individualism. I can't do all I need to do in life by myself. Period. Can I get an amen on that? Come on. Right? You just can't do it. So you shouldn't even try. Being with other people not only adds meaning and love and connection to your life, but just as importantly, it keeps you in check. Right? People will tell you, hopefully you got people you know in your life who will tell you, you are full of malarkey. That man on the sidewalk is a very nice man. You need people who remind you that sometimes your perception is not right. That sometimes you're full of it. Sometimes you're full of yourself and you need to get over you and start taking in more. Relationship holds up a mirror that helps you see your own behavior and decisions and words more clearly. If I can't know myself fully, and I can't without the input from others, then I can't see clearly the impact of my behavior on others. Secondly, I think we need time alone, but not just any old time alone. I think we need time alone that is about cultivating a deeper sense of self. I remember times when I used to go out by myself to see a movie or to dinner, and I always felt a little bit weird. Like, people around me were kind of like, who's the loser who's by themselves? So I'd bring a book, and I'd try to make it seem a little less weird. But after a while, I was like, no, you know, being alone, I actually want to be alone at this movie. I want to be in contact with who I am by myself in the world, figuring out what I'm like when it's just me. I want to have to just relate to me and see what kind of relationship I've got going on there. So what if we saw the time that we take to be with ourselves as contemplative time, as time we need to keep our own lives in perspective? Time alone not as an escape, but actually as an investment in improved quality of connection later when I return to connecting to other people. It's like what I've heard people say often, that when they go on retreat of some sort, a spiritual retreat of some sort, I've had several people say to me, I don't feel like they should be called retreats. Like, yes, I'm leaving my normal life kind of stuff behind, but I'm retreating so that I can do the work I need to do to go back into life and really get at it, right? They said it shouldn't be called a retreat, it should be called an advance. I'm stepping back so I can take some steps forward. And I like that notion of an advance, like an advance on my own soulfulness, so that I can engage in the world in a different way. Friends, we are better together, but our togetherness needs some serious work. We need to know ourselves better as we enter into connection. We need to be willing to engage in hard conversations that might challenge us, to see and to work on our edges and our blind spots. We will need to work on our emotional intelligence, our ability to see and to sense the feeling content in what is said and unsaid in our interactions with others. And we will have to embrace more nuance and less binary thinking. We will have to be willing to deal with messiness and lack of answers and clarity, more paradox and more tension. Relationships of all types are continual work and are seldom simple and clear-cut. And so the longer that I live, the more I have come to believe in a few core values when it comes to how to relate to other people. I'm letting you in on my deep secrets here, so you better listen in, okay? More humility. More both and. More openness to learning from the lives and experiences of others, especially those that are most unlike mine. Those are like my big three. They're not perfect and they're not foolproof, but they are a very good place to start. More humility, more both and, more openness to learning. They're a good place to start because it means less agenda from me, less willfulness from me. And although they don't guarantee or assure that I will agree with someone, that I will come away from a conversation with anyone with deep understanding and a sense that we completely get each other, it does mean that I am open to being changed by my interaction with you. Did you hear that? Open to being changed, not just my opinion being changed, but my being changed. I am open to the very real possibility that there is a solution or an answer or an understanding to whatever we're discussing that never even occurred to me. That never even occurred to me. Recently, a friend that I made at a Center for Courage and Renewal conference that I attended in late July came for a visit. Lovely man who came to visit, and we were talking about this Center for Courage and Renewal work that we had done. Those of you unfamiliar with it, you can talk, I can go on and on and on about it, so I'll have to talk about that later. But Parker Palmer, Quaker teacher, started a wonderful organization called the Center for Courage and Renewal, and they lead people on retreats that do these deep, small group conversations. So we were talking, this gentleman and I, who had been on this retreat, he said, "Now, you know, Sean, I'm curious, what has stayed with you from that retreat that we were on?" And we were sharing some things. And he said, "The one tenet of small group conversation in that model that's really stuck with me," he said, "the thing that's really stuck with me is when the going gets rough, turn to wonder." So I went back, I looked up my Courage for Renewal Touchstones of Conversation sheet, and this is what it says about when the going gets rough, turn to wonder. If you feel judgmental or defensive, ask yourself, "I wonder what brought her to this belief. I wonder what he's feeling right now. I wonder what my reaction teaches me about myself." Set aside judgment to listen to others and to yourself more deeply. When the going gets rough, turn to wonder. Another way to put that is turn to curiosity. Instead of shutting it down and assuming you are, "I already heard this story before. I know where he's going with this one." You could say instead, sees it that way. I wonder why. Or I've never thought of that before. What does that mean when he says silence? What does silence mean? So when the going gets rough, turn to wonder. Maintaining wonder about each other and all we don't know seems to be a pretty good course of action. Wonder about our own motivations and defenses. Wonder about why people do what they do. Curiosity before judgment or assumption seems like a pretty wise path to me. And so, friends, I want to conclude by saying I've been doing a lot of wondering about this congregation. I wonder what the future of the First Unitarian Church of Victoria will be. I wonder what we will create together. I wonder what's going on in all of your hearts. I wonder where this message has landed with you today. And I will try to wonder rather than assume or judge. Because I don't know what the future will bring, but I do know that it will only be found together. And that is as it should be. We are, in all of our messy imperfections, better together. May it be so now and always. Amen. And so they asked me, are we really better together? And I said, yeah, I think so. And then I thought about it some more. And I thought, what's the alternative? That we're better alone? That we're better demonizing each other or whole groups of people, which we've gotten entirely too good at? Or that we're better seeing one another as all in the same boat of life, all craving love, all mourning losses, all wishing for another day to try again. And so they asked me, are we really better together? And this time I said, you betcha.